I did time myself this morning, and I think I can get through all of this in less than 15 minutes. But Pierre, you're going to let me know when it's 5 minutes. Okay, good. So I've been doing quite a bit of work with low-impact development in Olympia, and it's sort of an oxymoron. You really can't go into a site with heavy equipment and say that you're not impacting soils. But what I usually start with when I'm working with engineers is I try to train them in the concept of what a soil profile actually is and what they're actually trying to save, which is the hydrologic function, the drainage function of that soil profile. That said, we always start with that soil profile at the top, that conceptualized diagram there that I think you've probably all seen right here. But these are different techniques that you can use on sites that sort of substitute for some sort of soil hydrologic function in the places where you can't avoid the impacts. So we encourage conservation of the soil. We use existing native soil conditions to integrate with new stormwater management techniques. We try to distribute the stormwater across the site comparable to how it was distributed across the site prior to development. So that baseline goal is to try to mimic the pre-development site hydrology. The problem that we run into over and over again is because people do not understand the soil profiles and soil hydrology, that we don't come up with the outcome that we desire. So when I say avoid the soil disturbance whenever possible, we talk about reduce clearing when not needed. And this usually means staged clearing. The ideal situation is if you're going into a site that's heavily wooded or even grassed in advance, you clear only the parts that are going to be future impervious surface, such as the roadways, the driveways. You try to keep the heavy equipment in those areas that you don't expect to be infiltrating water in the future. Try to leave the vegetation on the other areas. This will automatically make your client say, "I can't do that." But in fact, they can. It is possible. It might be a little more difficult, and it might require communication with your heavy equipment operator, but it is possible. Lots of people have done it. You try to do the construction when the soils are dry. Again, that does mean some of the work has to be done at a time of year that may not be convenient. But if you end up with a stormwater facility that's half the size of the one that you were required in the first place, obviously there's some financial benefits to doing that. In places that are landscaped, you tend to want to plant native vegetation, mainly because it will be adapted to local conditions, won't be as hard to maintain in the long run. You amend the soils when necessary, and I'll talk about that in a bit. And then finally, these five LID techniques, rain gardens, permeable pavement, pin foundations, green roofs, and rainwater harvesting, are all techniques that we can use to try to, again, get back to mimicking that pre-development site hydrology. So, can we make what's on the left-hand side really act like what's on the right-hand side? You and I know that's not possible. But we can at least say, that's our goal. We'll try to get as close to that as possible. And the only way we do that is by conserving soil hydrologic function. And that usually means, at a very basic level, we try to stay out of the soil profile. We try to do everything above grade. And that is a whole different mindset for typical construction techniques. I think you all know that, right? But so when I'm going into a site and I'm working for somebody and I'm trying to tell them what are the things we need to know in advance about this site, the first thing I'm going to look at, obviously, is a soil map. It gives me a generalized idea of what to expect in that area in terms of soil depth, soil drainage, how old is the soil, what kind of a landscape is it on. And when I do my site-specific work, my pits, I'm looking at soil structure. What kind of a profile do I have? I might have a site that's already been impacted. What can I do to ameliorate that? Texture is obviously very site-specific, and I think all of us know that the coarse-textured soils are a little bit, let's say, more tolerant to disturbance than the fine-textured soils. And finally, topography challenges. Once you do that initial assessment of the soil potential, then you go in and you plan your construction, not go out and clear the site first and then go in and try to figure out what you can do to fix the mess you just made. But the construction timing, erosion control, clearing limits, and impact avoidance, that's all soil science. That is all consulting opportunities for a soil scientist. Here's a low-impact development that I worked on in Olympia, Washington, and this one definitely has low impact in quotes. The reason they got a low-impact buy-off on this project is you can see there is a lot of green space around it. So they did leave a lot of the area pretty much untouched. These were drainage ways. They were setbacks anyway from stream systems and all of that. And they concentrated all of the development on the ridgetops. Now these, the soils, you can see the map on the left. It's a little hard to see, but almost all of these map units, 1, 2, etc., are alderwood, gravelly, sandy loam, which is a shallow glacial till soil. They had about 3 feet of soil over a glacial till, which is like concrete, about 100 feet thick, and the water table is perched on top of that till, traveling horizontally down slope, and that was what fed these drainage ways and the wetlands that were on site. And when we talked about it initially, I told them that if they really wanted to do this as a low-impact development, they would have to do above-grade foundations, because otherwise they were going to run into drainage problems around the foundations. They sold the low-impact development, but then when they went in and did the clearing, the standard builder said, it's easier for me to cut little notches in the side slope to put my houses in than to build it above grade. So they sort of didn't check with the original concept, cut into the till, and all of those houses had water in the crawl spaces, and they had huge stormwater problems, and they're still trying to solve this. So the best laid plans of mice and men sometimes go awry when people don't talk to each other and understand the background idea of what it is you're trying to accomplish. So of the 5 soil-forming factors across all ecosystems, living and once-living organisms are likely to be the source of the greatest problems or the greatest benefits in the soil's hydrologic function. And I'm talking about, when we talk about just organic matter in a soil, that helps structure, it helps drainage, it helps water quality and quantity control. We are also one of those biologic organisms, and sometimes we go in and the first thing we do is we strip off the A horizon and often the B horizon and think we're doing great things, getting down to that nice permeable substrate, the C horizon. This picture on the left is a soccer field where they applied sand over and over and over again, thinking the sand would make the field drain, and they would drive over it every time as they applied each new layer of sand and left this platy structure, and every time they put on sand, the drainage got worse, and they couldn't figure out what was going on. We dug the pits, and the earthworm burrows were the only things draining in the whole soil profile, and this little black stain is from the organics that were ponding on top, little grass that would rot seasonally, and then that organic material would drain down the earthworm holes, and that's how it was getting to the very nice sandy substrate that was 4 feet down. This was a huge mess and something they had to work on for quite a while. Now this is actually a before and after shot of the same site, and so can we carry out low impact development on a site such as this? Well, the answer is yes. We can use low impact development techniques on that site on the right. But if we had avoided the impact in the first place, we would have had a lot easier job when it was all said and done. What we've done on the right-hand side here is we've destroyed all of the soil pathways that allow water to drain horizontally across the till layer. This is another shallow till soil comparable to the one I showed you in the previous slide. And so what you're going to have to do in this particular one is set up a lot of drainage systems. You're going to have to try to sort of rebuild that drainage subsurface drainage system with artificial drains. And it's going to be a lot more expensive than if you had thought it out in the first place and decided what you were going to do. And a seasonal, if you'd done this in the middle of summer instead of in the middle of winter, you would not have anywhere near the damage that you see on this site. So what happens to baseline soil hydrologic functions when we don't think about things before the fact is you end up with situations like this, where you more or less have collapsed all of the macropores and even some of the micropores in the soil, and you have eliminated the horizontal transmissivity, so the water typically pops to the surface instead of infiltrating, and suddenly you're managing a lot of surface runoff that wasn't there previous to site development, and really these soils will not recover for decades or even hundreds of years, depending on how serious the damage is. So protection of the O and the A horizon is actually most important for conservation of surface infiltration. And this is, you have to do some pretty fast talking as a soil scientist to convince the engineers and the bulldozer operators that you really do want to leave as much of that soil in place as possible, as long as possible. As the longer you can leave it in place, the less likely you are to damage that background hydrologic function. And And the interesting thing is we make stormwater facilities to control water quantity and water quality, correct? And one of the first things they do in a stormwater facility is try to incorporate organic matter into the bottom of it to provide all that lovely treatment capabilities of an organic horizon. Well, if we just left the soils in place, a lot of that quantity and quality treatment is taken care of even on somebody's front lawn. And so that's the opportunity we miss. And the Bee Horizon obviously has additional benefits in terms of the clays and structure, larger pores, infiltration potential relative to what's underneath. So when we go out and do the work, we typically take these detailed soil pit descriptions and soil sampling for lab work. This is a very crude double ring infiltrometer, but it gives us an idea of what that particular layer of soil, how it will infiltrate. This particular soil series is the Nisqually loamy fine sand. You see the top 4 feet or so are quite black. This is an old prairie soil. Has a lot of organic ash, organic material and volcanic ash in it. And if you try to do an infiltration facility in that upper layer, despite the fact that it's a loamy sand, it will seal almost immediately. And so we are trying to get people in this situation, if they're going to put in a pond infiltration facility, to actually get down into the sandy layers below and to keep this material from coming down into the bottom of the stormwater facility. But across the site, we want this stuff left in place so that it can do its own wonderful job of infiltrating site-wide stormwater. Does that make sense? So getting back to which is more sensitive. If you're looking at a soil like this with lots of gravel and sand versus this glacial lacustrine lakebed sediment soil, obviously this one is going to tolerate a lot more heavy equipment damage and will probably still infiltrate in a decent rate even if it's fairly disturbed. But you will not get that water quality treatment that you get if you retain the A horizon at the surface. So when we build stormwater facilities in these sites, one of the first things we do is we try to get a rudimentary A horizon started again almost instantly. And another aspect of that, and I think you all know this just sort of automatically, is if you are looking at the infiltration rate of material like this, which could be 20, 50, 100 inches an hour, but then you put an A horizon on the top of it, that'll be finer textured and a little tighter, you really are going to drop your background infiltration rate to something closer to between 4 and 10 inches per hour at the best. So keep that in mind when you're making these recommendations to your client as well. So does adding straw to an impacted soil surface solve the problem? Because that the amend the soil surface seems to be where people want to start if they're not approaching that. They really think all you have to do is incorporate a little organic matter into the tops of soil and you've automatically recreated a soil profile that you disturbed in the first place. I think we all know that that's not a great idea, but if you have no other alternative, yes, you do have to amend the soil surface, and we'll get to that in a couple of seconds here. So I'm going to go over just some of these LID techniques that you should be familiar with, kind of what their basis is, when they're used. I've ranked them here in not any particular order. I like to start with pin foundations just because I think they're very, very interesting and they are becoming more broadly used. This one, you've got two different opportunities. There is a wall-type pin foundation and a pin pier, and I'll show you in a minute a foundation built with one of these. But this foundation is poured at grade. You can see they did scrape the grass off. They really didn't even need to do that. And in fact, there's a little bit of a slope in this direction, and you basically just pour it with the slope. So the top of the foundation obviously is level, but the bottom of the foundation might, you know, slope at even 10%. It works just fine. And these pin guides sit in the pour, and then the pins are driven in after the pour sets. They're using a piece of equipment here to do this, but as you can see, this is actually me. This is a pin pier foundation we put underneath an old garage that we rebuilt. The advantage in my fully landscaped yard, my existing house, is I really didn't want to tear my whole yard up with a piece of heavy equipment, and we didn't have any kind of heavy equipment on site here. So the only thing we had was the concrete truck to pour it. I prepped for this with my garden shovel, basically just flattened the surface. And you can actually drive the pin piers in relatively soft soil with just a mallet. Okay. This is a Penn Peer Foundation right here, where you can see this is even less impact. You just put the piers in and support beams, then you build the house up on top of this. They've used these pin piers to build walkways, all kinds of things, and they're very, very handy to get in sites that are quite wet, and you basically put the pin in down to bearing soil. The advantage, this is a typical foundation, pin pier foundation. So here, let's say we have water table right here. This one's going to have water in the crawl space. This one's high and dry, and the water's traveling horizontally underneath this one, just like it always did. And we've measured the relative humidity in this one versus this one. It's drier in this one. Rain gardens. These are simply little mini stormwater facilities right in your front yard. Typically, you excavate a little hole in the ground, a little depression, you backfill with some organic rich soil, you put some plants in, and you send your rain gutter runoff to these areas. Depending on your soil type, you can get 100% infiltration. Sometimes you just get a temporary detention and then you let it run off into the background stormwater system. But in any event, you are at least getting some infiltration or transpiration instead of everything going in a pipe down to the bottom of the hill. So rain gardens can have quite a bit of use. This is incorporated in a neighborhood, even in a swale running down the side street. Some of the challenges in these neighborhood-wide swales is when neighbors forget that it's a stormwater treatment facility or a conveyance facility and they decide to fill up that ditch in front of the house, but that's a problem that can be solved. Permeable pavement, I'm not going to get into this a whole lot, but it's used mostly in parking lot areas. We have something like this that is basically concrete with little tiny bits of glue. 1 minute, Pierre?
Yep.
Okay. And or backfilled aggregate. And I'm just going to green roofs. That's where you can get transpiration and treatment right on the building. Vertical panel walls like this one that are pretty interesting. We as soil scientists are going to help construct these green roof soils in quotes. Rainwater harvesting can be an actual cistern that pipes back into your house or something as simple as a rain barrel that you just use to water your garden. And so impact avoidance is the basis of LID. And if we can't avoid the impacts, then we do have opportunities to mitigate for the impacts. And I'm just going to flip. That's just a regular low impact, keeping the old swales in place and the old stormwater systems. And finally, so protecting the native profile should be our most baseline goal. That's what you sell as a consultant to your client. And I'm out of time. How about that?
If there's any questions, we will have Lisa will be here for anybody that wants to follow through on this.